Well, good evening, everyone. This is Gary, joined by Sam and Jeff, who you are well familiar with. And this evening, we wanted to talk more specifically on a topic. And we wanted to talk about the idea of risk, of living with risk, of the risks that we encounter in life. What do risks bring up in us, and how do we handle those things? And so that's what we'd like to do tonight, is have this conversation on risk, as we all learn together on this, and we also bring to the table what we have been learning on this. And Jeff, I know in some of the things that you've been reading and researching, you ran across a great quote and an idea found in the founding of our country. Why don't you talk about that?
I had a chance to guide up at Monticello, and in the entranceway to Monticello, really it was a museum of our country. And so after Jefferson retires as president, he goes back there, and he has maybe upwards of 100 people a day coming to visit him. And he would often go out into his parlor to speak with them, and the first thing that he would do with them is take them over to John Trumbull's picture of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And it was said that Stephen Hopkins from Rhode Island, when he was signing the Declaration of Independence, said that his hand was shaking, but that his heart was not. And I was thinking of what an incredible example of risk, that this gesture, this risk that they took, because these guys, these forefathers, they were talking about not if they were going to get hung, but when. They knew it was certain death when it came to the British Empire if they were to be caught. And so here is this example of risk where, you know, his hand is shaking. He's scared. He's really afraid. But his heart was not. His heart was in the right place. He knew what the right thing to do was. And I think Jefferson took these guys over there to show them this, to say, hey, listen, this is the price that we are willing to pay for this country. Live worthy of what you've been called to. So it was one of his favorite things to do, and I think that in that essence of taking that sort of risk, these men, I think when we all do, when we take this risk, we experience God in that.
Right.
So that was his favorite thing to do, you know, it was the coming of a liberation, actually, from a particular bondage to take that particular risk. And really, again, they had their lives on the line with that one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the idea of, as I would paraphrase it, a steady heart but a shaking hand.
Right.
You know, because fear is
right.
Fear. We cannot deny that there are risks out there. I ran across this quote by C.S. Lewis where he said, "The act of cowardice is all that matters. The emotion of fear is, in itself, no sin." And I love that because,
right.
You know, fear is fear. Now, what we do with it is the issue, and being a coward is the issue, not the experience of fear. So I love that illustration of making a difference in the world, but in that moment having a steady heart but a shaking hand. I love that.
I'm thinking about that movie, King's Speech, and when George was going to make the speech with Lionel at the end of the movie, I think he turns to Lionel and he says, Lionel says, "How you doing?" He goes, "I'm scared." I think right there he admits it. But he does it. He perseveres through that.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I think, this is Sam, I think the issue is that our lives consist of a whole set of things that we just need to live. You know, we need oxygen to live. But the thing is, a lot of the stuff that we need to live just comes naturally. We're not having a little podcast about why do we need to breathe oxygen, because it just happens naturally. But in all of our lives, not just in the Founding Fathers, not just in the War of Independence, but in every day, we need risk just to survive, but we don't talk about it. You know, we're not trained in grade school and high school or even college or even careers how to take risk. But it's inevitable. If you think about just your own life, you had to ask a woman to date you, you know, and you're scared. Your hands are a little clammy. Or you had to ask your wife to marry you. Or you change jobs. Or sometimes you have to correct your kids. And it's a risk not to correct them, but it's a risk to correct them too much. And in our life, every day is filled with risk. And yet it's just not a topic that people talk about. So
right,
I think
right.
It's a great topic.
Right. And what
yeah.
in life that is beautiful, valuable, stunning,
yeah.
what in life of those
right.
things does not require risk? I mean, they all
right.
do, just as you said, Sam. And let me read another quote I ran across with C.S. Lewis. And this was one I ran across years ago, but I keep it with me in my journal because it is so powerful. And he said, "To love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will certainly be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give your heart to no one, not even to an animal. Wrap it up carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Walk it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, and irredeemable." And I love that because it seems like that everything that we love is going to require taking a step of risk. And if we put our heart away by not taking risks, eventually, as Lewis says, our heart will change and it will become unbreakable, impenetrable, and irredeemable.
See, and one of the things that I like about the C.S. Lewis quote that you just read, Gary, so you're saying we can take a risk on love or we can just put a casket around our heart. But the issue is they're both risks. You know, the issue that's part of what C.S. Lewis is going after is he says if you don't take a risk, there's even a greater risk going on. You're going to risk having an impenetrable heart, a cold heart, a dead heart. You know, so C.S. Lewis is saying you cannot avoid risk. Either way you go, there's a risk.
Right. Yeah, isn't that good? I mean, just to understand that, as you have said before, Sam, the risk of doing nothing may be larger than the risk of doing what you want to do.
Right.
Right, what it does to your heart, what's missed for others because we don't take a risk, that's huge.
Yeah, Gary, you need to... you need to forward us those C.S. Lewis quotes before we do these podcasts because that's pretty heavy stuff right there that you laid out. I'm still
okay,
a little paralyzed.
Okay, I will next time,
that.
I promise.
That is not light reading right there, man. But that, yeah.
So let me ask you, we're talking about the idea of risk here, obviously. How would you guys define risk? What do you... I mean, when we're talking about risk, what do we mean by that word?
Yeah.
I'll take a first stab at it. When I'm talking about risk, I think the issue is that we're making a decision, we're taking some kind of action, and we don't know what the results of that decision or that action is going to be, but we do know that possible results of that decision or action can be pretty negative. There can be bad consequences. And so... The thing about taking a risk is if we do something, we know that it may go south on us. It may go bad. If the truth is every decision or every action had just wonderful possibilities and that was all, it wouldn't be a risk. We just do it. You know, that's why we breathe in the air every day because it's not a risk. We're just breathing the air. The problem with risk is making a decision or taking some action where the results may be negative. On the other hand, if we don't do them, the results will be even more negative. So, you know, in a simple way, I cannot ask this girl out when I'm in high school. And, you know, what's the risk? Well, the risk is I'll never ask a girl out in my life. You know, in the immediate future, it seems simple. But in the long term, it's going to have consequences, just my relationship with possible spouses.
Mm-hmm.
As we
okay,
go over
let me
the risk. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you, Sam and Jeff. There are things that you guys have done or are doing that you just did. I mean, it appeared you did it without much thought. You just did it. because it was right and because you wanted to and because the opportunity was right. And I would look at that and say, that was risky, but to you it wasn't. So
yeah.
What do you do with that?
Well, let me give you an example out of my own life. I grew up in a family that had a lot of physical risks. My dad just loved physical danger, and so he taught us all kinds of really stupid things. So in 1967 or 1968, there were these big riots in Detroit, and, you know, the National Guard was called out. My dad put the kids in the car. I mean, I was 10 or 11 years old. We drive right down in the middle of the riots. You know, people are breaking into stores next door to us. My dad's saying, hey, look at that, look at that. There was a certain way we were taught not to fear physical things, and we grew up that way. But I found out partway through my marriage that I was afraid to disappoint my wife. So on the outside, I'm doing all these risky things. I'm ski jumping, and I'm doing flips on skis, and I'm learning to fly a plane. But the truth is, I was scared to disappoint my wife, and so I would never say anything to her where she might be disappointed with me. And so doing those physical things for me wasn't risk. The thing that was risk, and that I failed at to start with for years, was just saying something where I might say, hun, when you do that, that's hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for my heart's risk, in other words, each of us has a heart fear, and my deepest heart fear was disappointing my wife. And I didn't risk that way for a long time. Physical risk was nothing for me. I mean, I shouldn't say it was nothing, but it wasn't very much. But that sort of emotional risk was something very scary for me.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
So a big element of what we call risk is our perception, right? It's as you were defining it before, it's what we see as the possible downsides. And things are risky. I mean, so some of the things that you were doing, Sam, physically were risky. There was risk to them, but your perception is the risk is not that great. Whereas, you know, doing something that may disappoint your wife, your perception of the risk is very great. And therefore, that was risky to you, right?
Right. I think each of us have some fears in our heart that are magnified. And sometimes if we don't share them with anybody else, you know, we're living in our own personal bubble. We're not even questioning it. And, you know, when I was ski jumping, I would say, what's the worst that could happen? And the worst that could happen is I might break a leg. Well, I've already broken a leg. No big deal. You know, 6 months later, you're back on the skis. That wasn't a concern for me. But for some reason, disappointing my wife seemed in my mind this huge, you know, this huge monster, something that I didn't know how to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fear in my heart. And I think each of us has different kinds of fears. Sometimes it's with your wife, or sometimes it's succeeding in your ministry. But we all pursue something aggressively because of this big fear.
You know, Sam, I think that obviously skiing, flying, and all those things, they were risks. I think the most difficult one usually for people is the relational risk. And that's what you're talking about with your wife. And I think that gets back to that, you know, original risk that God really took with us. There's something that goes way back where we're very fearful. Sometimes the greatest risk a person can take is to let another friend come in, especially after there's been a betrayal, you know, because that really takes a lot of our heart, you know. And so the other things were risks. You know, I think we wind up taking more risks than actually we, you know, every time I went to work for 23 years, I strapped myself onto two rockets and 50,000 pounds of jet fuel, you know, and then hurled myself to 35,000 feet with lightning bolts and dodging hail, you know. So, I mean, I lived in that, you know, but the relational ones sometimes could be the most difficult.
I agree with you, Jeff. I do think that there's lots of risks. I mean, you know, the truth is you get in your car and you drive down to the local, you know, gas station to get some soda. It's a risk given the fact that, you know, there's so many car accidents. But I think that different ones have different sort of tolerances for different kind of risks. And so after you've, how many hours have you flown, Jeff? 20,000 hours? I bet you've lost track. You know,
yeah, I did.
I
stopped logging them.
Yeah, and when you stop logging them, it's because you now know that the risks are pretty minuscule given your training, your experience, the reliability of all the planes.
Right.
Whereas other people are scared to get on a plane, even though they know all those statistics. There's some way that the reality of the bad consequences seems bigger than the reality of just the facts that flying is very safe. There's a sense of reality in their heart that's disproportional to the true reality.
Okay, so I think from what we're saying here, a major, major element to this idea of what we call risk is our perception. Because certain things that we do without thinking, you know, they're an adventure, right? This is fun. This is a challenge. We use those words. And other things are, it's really risky. In fact, it's too risky. And I think a lot of it comes down to our perception of what's the downside. So therefore, if the downside is this could break my friendship, or this could break the love of my wife, or respect, or this could reinforce shame, the downside could seem way too high for me. That could seem ultra risky. Whereas something else is, you know, it might not work. I might think, that's no big deal. That's just
right.
Fun. I'm just struck by hearing you guys how much perception seems to be at the heart of what we call something risky, and that therefore paralyzes us. I mean, as I was thinking about this conversation, I ran across this verse we're all very familiar with, which is 1 John 4:18, that says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out all fear, because fear involves punishment, and the one who fears is not perfected in love. And I just thought about that, and I thought, gosh, that's really true. If I was convinced that my life was so enveloped by God's pleasure over my life because of the work of Christ, and that he was taking care of me, I don't think I would fear much. But I do. This is not a confession that would startle anyone. I'm not perfected in love in any way. But I do realize that my confidence, that in one sense, because of my life in God, I am in some ways untouchable, you know, by life that could destroy me. Man, I would not see many things as risky.
Yeah, that's good.
But Gary, I think that like many things, there's usually multiple levels to this. So there is a certain way we think we can have a perception that the consequences are greater than we think they are, okay? Or the odds are greater. You know, so some people will read that, you know, the chance of dying in an airplane is 1 in 1 billion, but they'll think, no, that's just not true. It's really like 1 in 10. You know, in that case, they're just unrealistic. But I think for me, like going back to my example of fearing of disappointing my wife, I think the odds were there's a good chance I would disappoint my wife and that my analysis was accurate. I think that going one level deeper was I thought that disappointing my wife might in some way be destructive. And so in other words, I think my analysis that I might disappoint her was actually pretty accurate. But the further consequence of it is, but you know what? It wouldn't have been the end of the world. It would have been a good thing to work things out with. But I sort of think, if I disappoint her, you know, the world's at the end or something. That's where the disproportion came into account, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, my deepest fear in some senses was disappointing my wife. But as I came to think about it and said, now, living a lie is no better. Living a lie is worse. That's a much worse, you know, life pattern for my life than just avoiding little disappointments.
Right. Okay.
So
what I'm hearing from you is that what we can do with fear, which eventually we call risk, that makes us stop from doing certain things, we can either embrace it or we can deny it. What I mean is, let me say this again. So what I'm hearing from you is that we can, let me say this again, there are real consequences. You got me all
sorry, Gary.
There are real consequences for our actions in this life.
Right.
And to deny them is not helpful. In fact, that's really ignorant is what it is.
It's ignorant.
That's naive. And we can either embrace those things and be paralyzed, or we can try to deny those things, which isn't helpful and often gets us into situations that later we regret and realize that wisdom would have kept us out of those things.
Right. And so there's a certain way we can't embrace it and be paralyzed, and we can't deny it and be naive and Pollyanna-ish. We have to face it.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to face it. And, you know, in the end, for my wife, I had to face it. And it ended up being great, although I made a lot of failures along the way. In other words, I sort of actually lived out the bad consequences of what I thought would happen. But I think if we develop a life of risk, if we develop a lifestyle that embraces risk, we can actually start walking through that and realizing those failures are okay. They're just going to train us for more things in the future.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, failure, we often learn a lot more from failure than we learn from success. And I think in risk, we're afraid of failure. But the truth is, I've learned a lot more in failure in my life than success. I bet most people have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now here's a fascinating thought with
that
one,
sense.
And then I want you to jump in on this one, Jeff.
I was
thinking about this earlier, and that is this: just because we are willing to take a risk because we believe it's the right thing. We think the timing is right. We sense God is saying to do this. Sometimes we think then it has to work well. And we all have had enough experience in our life, years, that
mm-hmm.
we have walked into something believing God, believing he's spoken to us about doing it, and it failed. And so as I was thinking about this with my own life, I think sometimes what God is after when he says, yeah, I want you to take the risk and do it, and it fails, that God is saying, exactly, that's exactly what I had planned, was for that to fail, because I am up to something bigger than the success that you are hoping for.
Amen.
And
that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
So just say more.
Okay. You know, when I was thinking about this word risk, I was thinking about it this way, that there are really two realms. You know, when in our fallen state, we're of the earth. That's what the term mundane means. But what Jesus was doing is he was bringing the kingdom back to earth. And I think that there's this boundary layer between of the earth and the kingdom. And in that boundary layer, what it takes to go from one realm to the other is risk. Risk is a portal that brings heaven to earth. And it's really, risk is your passport to the frontier, where there's kind of no maps out there. And so, whereas we as men want to measure our life against success, God is after so much more than success. He's after our calling, and our calling is much deeper than success. So what we feared, the lack of success or failure, is not what God is really measuring our life by, right? He's kind of measuring our life whether we lived or not, not whether we succeeded or failed. And so that's what he's asking of us, you know, that I have come that you might have life, right? So he's asking us to live with our full heart. There's this one passage from Golf's Sacred Journey written by this guy, David Cook, and he takes a bunch of men out on the golf course, and he's teaching them how to play golf, but they're experienced golfers. And what he has them do is he has them paint a fairway. And so this is the explanation he starts giving to the men as he paints the fairway, because they would look at water as a hazard or a large tree as something that a ball can get stuck up in. And he says, by the way, he added, that great tree is not your enemy. The bunkers are not your enemy, nor are the white stakes or the red stakes or the yellow stakes. And water is not your enemy, nor any object on the course. Players often look upon these inanimate objects with fear or disdain. They allow these objects to steal energy and focus. Your painting will reveal that they are just part of your story. They are part of the perspective. enjoy painting them, they will be guides to lead you to the next target. And so I like that, you know, that we can't avoid failure. And if we're always just playing to win and hold on to that, I think that that's what keeps us trying to control our circumstances and not really fully offer our heart. Am I still on?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just thinking about what you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What strikes me about that personally is, I mean, from my own heart, is this idea that if I could walk into a risky situation, a risky maneuver, a risky choice, with the idea that there is something I want in this, the reason I'm taking the risk is I think there's something, you know, valuable, needed, weighty at the other end. But to be open to, but God may have something even more valuable than that through this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know who said this as I'm looking through my journals, but what I will say is I didn't say this. it's this quote. God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our consciousness, but shouts to us in our pain. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And I'm so struck by this idea that sometimes, you know, we take a risk and it may end up painful, but God is shouting to us and he's trying to awaken something else in us that's even more valuable than what we were wanting.
Right. And Gary, as you're talking, I almost never remember passages, but I'm remembering this passage in Jeremiah 17. It's Jeremiah 17:7, I think, that says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord." And the point there is, I think sometimes I trust in the Lord. I say, okay, if I take this risk, you're going to give me financial success. Or if I take this risk, you'll give me the woman of my dreams. Or if I take this risk, you'll make the ministry well. And then, as Gary said, sometimes we take a risk, even prayerfully considering this, and we fall flat on our face. And I think the passage is saying we're not just trusting in the Lord to get the other thing that we really want. You know, we want success, or we want that woman, or we want a great ministry. That's trusting in the Lord for what our heart really wants. The passage goes on to say, "Blessed is the man whose trust is the Lord." In other words, just having the Lord is the thing that we need. And sometimes God's just letting other things fall flat on our face, and it's okay.
Right.
It's okay.
Right.
It's just all right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Sam, let's go back to what you said earlier, and that was this idea of how do we embrace risk? How do we have a lifestyle of embracing risk, taking risks, being open to risk? How do you answer that question, Sam?
Well, I'll tell you something my dad taught me. My dad was a big risk taker. My dad had this little saying that he taught us just from really early on, and he said, you want to identify your fears and then learn to sort of face your fears. And he said, he gave me one lesson. He said, in the future, what are the things you're anxious about? That's expressing what your real fear is. You're fearing this won't turn out the way you want. He said, in the past, what are the things you feel guilty or ashamed about? Those are the things that you fear that you didn't do right. And in the present, what are the things that make you most irritable or the most angry? Those are the things that you fear aren't going your way. So my dad said, in the future, it's anxiety. In the past, it's guilt. And in the present, it's the things that make you angry. And he said, find out those things that make you the most fearful. And then he said, pick some small things and start walking into it. So if you're afraid of heights, start crawling on the roof of your garage. You know, I mean, literally, my dad had us crawling on the roof of our garage just to say, you know what? This isn't so bad.
Wow.
Because my dad's theory was that if you learn to deal with fear, you still may fail. You may fall off the garage and break a leg, but you'll eventually find out the broken leg wasn't as bad as you thought it would be. It's a little bit of pain, but not as much. And you will soon learn to be able to walk into bigger fears. So,
yeah.
You know, there's small fears, there's small risks, medium risks, and large risks. But he said, number one, identify fears.
Yeah.
And two, is start to walk into some of the smaller ones and develop a lifestyle that says, I'm going to learn with wisdom, you know, you got to balance this, to walk into some of the small fears.
Right.
If that makes sense, what I'm saying here.
Oh, it definitely does. It definitely does. And I think that's exactly what God is asking of us, is that as we offer what it is that's in our heart, like Gary says, to live like an artist, you know, we're not saying, hey, we need to have the next Mona Lisa from you, you know, or if you're, you know, we don't expect you to be the next Steven Spielberg or write the next movie Braveheart. There's something within your grasp that God is asking you to offer. And it begins with just like kind of going, go for that, start with that, offer that, and take that risk. I definitely, that's a great exercise. I've got to say right here, I'm pretty impressed with your dad, Sam.
Oh, me too. Oh, I would listen. I was writing all those things you were saying down. I thought, that's really discerning.
That's phenomenal. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I can remember me and my dad in the cockpit, and he's trying to teach me something, and we're fighting. We actually got into a fist fight in the cockpit because I didn't want to do it.
Well, I'm not writing that down, Jeff.
Well,
okay,
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, okay. So what I glean from that, then, is that, first of all, life always entails risks for all of us. No one can live a risk-free life, really, without killing their heart. And even with that, that's a huge risk.
Right.
So we all live with risks. And it sounds like one of the things that we have to do with risk, since they are a reality of life, is first of all, discover what the reality of that, of our fear is. As you were saying, as your dad was telling you, what are you really afraid of? What really are the risks of this decision or move or action? So deal with reality, discover what it is. And then the second thing is, then address it. You know, because you might find that some of them you can overcome. Some you can reduce the risks, and some you step out, and if God's in it, you'll make it. If he isn't, you won't, but you'll learn.
Well, I here's the way my dad taught me this. So I was 8 or 10 years old, I don't remember, and we'd had a little fear of heights, and so my dad said, well, let's just go up on the roof. So I was up on the roof with my friend, my dad was on the ground. And my friend had been talking about a World War II movie we watched, probably D-Day, I don't remember, about building parachutes. My dad says to us, he says, why don't you build a parachute and jump off the roof? And I look at him, you know, at this point, I have to do it because my dad has said it. So my friend Mark and I go downstairs, we grab a sheet, we grab a bunch of ropes, we tie them to the four corners of the sheet, and we tie them around my chest, and I jumped. And I hit the ground, and I looked up, and we had never measured the ropes. And the ropes were so long that they went from my chest all the way to the parachute that's sitting on the roof. And my dad is cracking up. He is cracking up. And I tell my family at dinner, and my mother, of course, is a little angry, and she says, Dad, Bob, he could have broken a leg. And my dad said, that's right, he could have, so what? And he wasn't a heartless man. He really wasn't.
Right.
I mean, he was actually quite tender. But my mother sat back and said, because my mother was afraid of physical pain, and my mother just sat back and said, you know, you're right, Bob. If Sam had broken his leg, he would have learned physical pain isn't so bad. She said, my whole life I've been afraid of physical pain. So 40 years later, I've never learned that lesson. My dad was sort of encouraging us to walk into something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say? They say breaking a femur bone is like the second worst thing in the world as far as pain.
What's the worst?
Giving childbirth.
Oh, well, I
That's
see my
true.
Mom did that.
Yeah.
So Brian Regan says, you know what must be hell is giving birth while your femur bone is cracked, you know?
Your dad, what a remarkable man.
Yeah,
I think we need to write his biography, seriously.
The roof
is only 10 feet up. It's not like I would have broken a leg, you know. It's just that he was trying to teach me to overcome fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So going back to what...
Which is, by the way, a picture of our Heavenly Father. I think he is working that in us all the time. Because this world really comes at us to bury under a lot of woundedness the glory of our life. And I think to offer it and to do something and to break out, really that's where risk kind of comes in, you know. And I think that's what God's doing in our life. Gary, right, we talk about in the calling retreats, Jesus coming along and going, hey, push out into the deep waters and drop your net. And really that is just a culmination of the way Jesus lived with these guys. You know, it was, 12 guys, 3-year high adventure camping trip. You know, the winds and the waves, and these guys think they're going to die on the water. And it's really hard for us to read that and really get into the moment of these guys really thought they were going to die. You know, then there's the rock climbing adventure where they get up there and Jesus transfigures himself. And then, you know, the Father speaks from heaven, the heavens open up, and these guys are on the deck, you know. So there's, you know, could you imagine the disciples, every time they'd walk into a new town and they'd come across a temple and Jesus would start walking towards the temple. You know, I'm sure these guys were like, oh, great. You know, he's going to go there and pick a fight, you know. It was never safe, really, to be with this guy. You know, he's casting out demons. He's going up to the guy at the tombs and casting him out. He's touching leopards. He's talking to a Samaritan woman. There's just nothing safe about being with him. And so, you know, that we could maybe talk a little bit about that. How have we domesticated this faith? But I think that this is what he's doing in our life. He's really kind of calling us out. And so when we see that scene where Jesus is telling Peter, hey, man, push out into the deep waters, you know, and let your nets down there, you know, is that risk to leave behind everything that you knew to be comfortable, the things that were traditional in your life, the things that were safe, and to push out because there's this whole other realm that I want to open up to you. And it's so far greater. And I think that that's what he's doing. I think your dad in that scene was a picture of our Heavenly Father.
You know, one of the things you were saying.
Oh, go ahead, Jerry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish that thought.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, when I jumped, my dad laughed, but he came over and hugged me, and he said, "I am so proud that you did that."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
right.
Telling you,
and you
I
busted your
really
butt,
proud.
Right? You know, you.
I mean. He was saying, I love you, man, and I just think that's cool. And if you remember when Jesus sends the disciples out two by two, they go out, they do all kinds of stuff, they come back, and it says Jesus just rejoiced. You know, Jesus did train his disciples to go out and do risky things. And I think God is trying to train us through our life, although our culture is trying to make us safe, you know, better safe than sorry kind of thing. But I think God
right.
really is trying to put us into situations where we have to make a risky decision or do a risky action.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, the very fact that he's putting you in a position to make and take a risk is, in a sense, a validation of your Father. Because he's been developing all these years, and he's been building you, and he knows he wants to move you, and risk is that vehicle of movement, you know? So in a sense, it's a validation. And I do think that if we choose not to take a risk, I think he makes the water so hot that eventually you got to get out of the pot, you know? He's really capable of leading your journey, you know? And he's the one really kind of the author of it. And I think he makes life so difficult, eventually you just have to take the risk.
The thing that I'm reminded of as you tell that story, Sam, is I remember years ago hearing Dan Allender talk about there are three kind of levels of adventure. And adventure really is, in many ways, another word
risk.
For risk. And he said there are casual adventures. Those are the things that we kind of do in our spare time. We call them hobbies, vacations. And he said, you know, the risk is really minimal. It's mild. So it might be, you know, climbing a 14, or it might be whitewater rafting. It might be backpacking. You know, it could be many, many things. Those are casual adventures. And then he said, then there are critical adventures. Those are the things that involve major arenas of life. You know, it's marriage, it's work, it's relationships, it's business, it's those kind of things, and the risks feel huge. They really do. It feels like possibly life or death. And typically, he says, the question that we're confronted with in our own heart is, do I have what it takes in this situation? It really begs the question of, can I do this? And am I willing to take this risk? Because I'm not sure I can do this. I can come through. And then he says, but there's not only casual and critical, but there are crucial adventures. And he said those things are the ones that involve legacy, the advancement of the kingdom, our calling. These are life-changing things, and the risk is really huge. And he said that begs the question of not do I have what it takes, but rather will God come through? Because whether I believe I have what it takes or not isn't the biggest issue at this point. It is so big that even if I have what it takes, God is going to have to come through to pull this one off. And his whole point was that we need all three, that the casual adventures, you know, the whitewater rafting, the backpacking, the sailing, the whatever it is that has a little bit of risk to it, prepares us for the critical adventures, to have the courage to step into those, which takes a lot of courage, which then prepares us for the crucial ones, which is why God has us here in this world. So I can kind of see that your dad doing that. I think that's pretty phenomenal.
Well, and Gary, even as you just described Dan Allender's casual, critical, and crucial. Is that the way it was called? I think it was casual, critical, crucial.
It was
crucial.
Casual, then critical, then crucial, yeah.
It really does remind me of your book where you talk about, even in calling, awakening, deepening, and fulfilling. I think that God trains us through some casual adventures and risks, and it's helpful for us to embrace those casual adventures and risks, but then move into the critical adventures and risks. Finally, so that we're prepared and we have the ability to deal with risk. You know, I think the more we take risk and fail at that just as much as succeed, the more we're not paralyzed by taking another risk.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can develop a lifestyle of saying, you know, I'm used to taking risks, and when I'm in the middle of a risk, I'm not paralyzed. I'm not totally absorbed in it. I'm comfortable. It's a helpful lifestyle to have so that we can move into the final critical and crucial risks.
Yeah.
So you know, just maybe for a minute, if we could kind of break down those three and talk about them a little bit, because I think each of them is critical. You know, one is not more important than the other. They're more intense. Some are more intense, but I think they're all very important. And I would like to just read a little clip here from Gary, one of our favorite authors here, Irwin McManus. And he says that, I've seen too many kids raised in Christian homes who are indifferent to Christ and often carry a great disdain for the church. Sometimes, and again, he quotes sometimes, it's the result of blatant hypocrisy, but other times it's the result of nothing less than sheer boredom and monotony. We raised our kids in a cocoon of domestic faith and wonder why they ran as far as they can to find adventure. And, you know, as I was thinking about this topic of risk, I was thinking about all these extreme sports and things that guys are doing out there. And to me, I honestly not only think that they are looking for God, but in some of those moments, I think they actually experience him. You know, the idea that they're running on the edge, you know, and experiencing, you know, I don't think they're addicted to the big waves or jumping out of airplanes. I think they're actually addicted to God. They're experiencing something of him out there. And because there's really not, we haven't really addressed that much in the Christian faith, I think these guys wind up finding their own church, you know, at the headwaters of the Gali, or at 10,000 feet in the back of a DC-3, they circle up and rally before this big adventure. And that, well, I think one of the greatest things that we can do is, you know, I think these kids are out there without a priest really explaining to them what they're experiencing in that moment. And I heard on base camp here today that Kevin Miles has taken six guys on a backpacking trip up to the Glacier National Forest, and I'm thinking, how come I didn't hear about that? You know, what a great way to recover the gospel with men on these adventures. So I do think that even though you're terming that as a casual adventure, I think it's absolutely critical.
Well, I think it's critical because it's training us. It's training us for some of the adventures that have life-changing effects on our spouse, on our family, our kids, and the people around us. And we need that training. You can't play the football game if you haven't been in the training. I mean, it's a critical part of the training.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And with the idea that we need to be mindful of what makes our heart come alive and ask the question, why? What was it about this that made my heart come alive? But realizing that activity alone is not enough. It's supposed to lead us to the next adventure, the more transcendent adventure. So I agree with you, Jeff.
I do too.
You know, there is something that's going on with you know, with especially the younger generation, who that's where they want to live because life comes to them, but they stay there because they think there's nothing larger than that, and
right.
they need, you know, a mentor, a priest, a teacher, a pastor, whatever term you want to put on that would lead them into the greater thing.
Right.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. This is a great question that came up on the chat line, and there are so many great questions that have come up. But the question was, how do we determine when it comes to risks or risky things, what is, you know, foolish, naive, ridiculous, probably shouldn't be taken, and what are the risks that are important, they're crucial, we should step into those things? How do we determine that? Because obviously in this world we live in, not every decision, not every risk is good and valuable. How do we determine?
I think there's a lot of different things. I'll give one. I think one thing is evaluated experience. So when I, you know, because my dad taught us to be risky and he taught us to snow ski, I got into ski jumping. So I would do jumps and I would do all kinds of jumps. And one day after a competition, I'd done a lot of jumps. And literally on the last run of the day, I go down and I just do one more jump just because it's fun, you know, because I like to do it. But the problem was, is I was tired. And so in the midst of the jump, I wasn't able to recover. I hit the ground and I broke my leg, you know. Finally, I broke my leg that I've been promising to do for my whole life. Now, earlier when I was doing these jumps, I'd been trained in doing the jumps. You know, I people had trained me how to do it. I knew how to do it. I knew that when I went off the jump, I was going to land and I was going to be safe. But at the end of the day, when I'm tired, I go off the jump, my body just isn't going to be able to recover. Now, what I learned from that is I just have to be able to understand my own physical conditions. You know, sometimes you're tired. Sometimes you're just sleepy. Sometimes you are out of emotional energy. And I think there's different times when you can deal with risks more competently or less competently, partly just based on evaluating how you've done with risks in the past, how you've handled the failure or how you've handled the success. So experience itself, who was it? Was it Paul Stanley who said this? Experience itself isn't valuable. It's only evaluated experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, that's good.
And so I think part of the way we do have to balance wisdom and risk. I think it's unwise to take no risks, but I think it's also unwise, you know, to jump off the Empire State Building. So somewhere in between there must be a wise medium, a wise balance.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that, I think, is taking small risks, evaluating the experience,
mm-hmm.
and just learning from it.
Yeah. You know, I'll take I'll take a crack at that, Gary. You know, one of the things I love about what we're doing with this calling is learning about your life and living an observed life. And with that, there are certain things that are going to be true about you. And God is wanting to reveal who you are in the kingdom. And does this risk look like releasing who you are and offering what's in you to the world? And so that's what I love about what we're doing. So there's training involved in that. And then there's also good counsel. You know, it's a good idea to take an idea that you have and get around a trusted group of brothers and sisters, for that matter, and ask them, say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about this. But the truth is, I don't think anybody can ever answer the question that was asked to us. Because really what you're learning how to do is you're learning how to walk by the Spirit. And that the problem is with the Spirit is its life form, its heartbeat is in another realm. And sometimes it looks ridiculous to the realm that we live in. I think that's the thing about faith. It just doesn't seem to make sense in this realm. And so really we can't give a set of precepts on what risks to take and what risks not to take. What we're saying is that you need to walk with God. And that, you know what, it's okay to make some mistakes. You know, even if you don't quite know, but you really feel compelled, my advice would be go for it. Because like we were talking, even if there's a failure, it could be one of those things that leads you to the target eventually, and you're going to learn from it. So I would rather see a guy taking more risks than no risks. You know, and obviously we see that with the parable of the talents, the guy that just buries it, you know. So getting guys out there to take risks seems to be more of an issue, I think, especially in the church today.
I absolutely agree. Mm-hmm. There's a guy named Alistair McIntyre who wrote a book, boy, I think in his 60s, maybe 70s. He's a philosopher. And anyway, he wrote a book called After Virtue. And his philosophy of the book is that our modern society thinks that risks are only episodic. You know, you might get mugged once in your life. But and he said ancient people taught people to take risks all the time because their lives were, you know, they could be captured by marauding bandits, they could be killed by animals. I mean, their life was risk. But Alistair McIntyre's whole thesis of the book is that we are constantly facing our heart's greatest nightmare. What is our heart's greatest nightmare? Because we're constantly facing that, and we need courage to face that. So that's the theory of his book, which is sort of what Jeff is saying, is we're trained not to think of risk, whereas McIntyre's whole point is that's all we face every day. We just don't consider it.
Right. We definitely do.
Yeah. You know what? And so, yes, I'm listening to you guys. This is helping me. I'm thinking through this. So, yes, it's walking with God, no doubt about that. But sometimes what I experience is that as I'm trying to walk with God, if I am in a major battle with fear, it's real hard for me to hear him well.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm so invested in this decision to take action or not take action, whatever that is. And so it is listening, in my opinion, listening to God. What is he saying? It's also, you know, the wise counsel. Proverbs 1:5 says, you know, a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. It's getting other people who are outside of the fear that we are feeling and the possible consequence of our actions who can look at our life and say, I think what you're feeling, that fear, is unfounded, or that's a very real fear. And what may come of consequence from your decision may affect more than just you. It may affect, you know, your wife, your children, your business, whatever that is, and bring those things up. So one, things that we are not seeing that we need to see, and those things that we are seeing that we have completely blown out of proportion, and they can tell us, you know, we think you're being deceived on this one. So, yes, I'm agreeing with you. Wise counsel, I think, is huge. And then I also think that when these opportunities, these situations come up, I think it's also important that we ask the question of, where is my heart on this one? What's my motivation? Both with the motivation to take the risk or the motivation not to take the risk. In other words, I have to stop and say, why do I want to do this? Is this because I'm going to prove to everybody I'm somebody and I can do something?
Right.
That's a bad motivation. Or it could be, you know, what's my motivation for not wanting to take this risk? And that could be, you know, because one more time, I'm going to prove to be a failure. or I don't know what these guys will do in our relationship if I can't come through. And so either way, I think it, and of course that has to be so much the voice of God as well, of what is my motivation right now to do it or not to do it.
Right.
Okay, so let me throw out another possible dilemma, and that is this, because I hear this quoted quite often, and it is scripture, and there is truth to it. What do you do with this in the midst of our conversation of risks, and often what we perceive as a risk versus simply an adventure is fear. I mean, that's what's playing into this being, quote, risky. And so it's Philippians 4:7, right? The peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Or in fact, you know what? Let me give you actually a different verse than that, and that's Colossians 3:15. Very similar, but this is the one more often quoted. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching, and admonishing one another. And so people will say, well, Scripture says let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. And the word rule literally means, and it does, to arbitrate, to umpire, to direct, to determine. And so often what is given as a principle from the Scripture is, if you have no peace, then don't do it. This is how God is directing you. Let peace be the arbitrator. Now, what do you do with that verse when usually something feels risky because we are at a lack of peace at that moment about it? We know there's risks.
Yeah, you know, I think it goes back to that Stephen Hopkins, you know, that his hand was shaking, but his heart was not. And in that, I think the heart is what should rule. And I think each man knows the deep issues. It's the deeper issues of the heart. That's the thing that God is looking at. That's the wellspring of life. That if it's just the fear of our hand shaking in that situation, whatever that could look like metaphorically, I think asking that heart issue, what's your heart really saying, might be the direction I would encourage a man to take.
The verse Gary quotes is a very interesting verse, because I think the peace of Christ rules in our hearts is something that we need, although I don't know that it's always happening in that moment. So you guys have heard the story of where my whole life I felt like I was going to be a pastor or be a missionary. I felt like that's what God just called me to do. And I was in the mission field after college for 3 years, and I was praying, and I felt like God say, not now. Now's not the time. And I would say that I felt the revelation from God.
Are you saying you're not a pastor?
Pardon me?
Are you saying you're not a pastor?
I'm a lot of things. Just ask my wife. But
I would have to disagree with you on that. That, you know.
Well, anyway,
go ahead.
I was overseas. I felt like God called me to do something different, and I can't say that I had peace in my heart, because my whole life, For as a 25-year-old, my last 10 or 12 or 14 years, I thought I was going to be a pastor, a missionary. My education had been geared around it. My mission field had been geared around it. I felt like God said, leave and get a secular job. And I would say my heart was saying, what am I going to do? I don't have any training. I don't have any education. What am I going to do? I would say the peace in my heart, there was a type of peace. The type of peace was sort of God's in control and he's going to make this work. But I would say that if you talked to me in the middle of it, I was conflicted. I felt like it was very clear this is what God was asking me to do. And I felt a certainty about that. But I can't say that I was completely filled with peace, you know, and love and groovy vibes. I was sort of saying, what the heck is God doing to me? You know, mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. And so let me reflect some verses back that really do speak of what you just said. In John 14:27, Jesus says, peace I leave with you. My peace I give you, not as the world gives do I give you. Do not let your heart be troubled, nor let it be fearful. So again, Jesus is saying, you know, I'm going to give you this peace, but it's not like the world gives you. And I think the
right.
world gives us this peace that everything is going to be okay. You are safe. I think this peace is different. Jesus said it's going to be a different thing. And I don't want your heart to be troubled, though you're fearful.
Yeah.
You know, do not
fine.
Let it be fearful. Don't live and be dominated by fear.
And
yeah.
that is my point, is I've talked to a lot of people who feel like the litmus test of every decision is, do you feel peaceful? And the truth is, in my experience, some of the biggest risky decisions, I don't know that I've felt peaceful. I've felt a certainty or an assurance or that this is the right thing, but I don't know that I always just felt wonderful, you know, just like floating on a sea of air. You know, I'm concerned with people who sometimes just say peace is the litmus test of whether this is the right thing or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay,
yeah.
So let me give you another verse that disrupts the idea that peace is a litmus test. Philippians 4:7, right? The peace of God, which surpasses
yeah.
all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do with the peace verse, and you know, obviously it's Scripture. It's right there. We have to understand what it's saying. But where I want to go in a situation is where I feel anxiety because there is something that feels risky in front of me. Where I go is, okay, first of all, the lack of peace begs the question, am I walking in the Spirit? Because Galatians 5:22 says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and it goes on. So I have to ask myself, first of all, am I walking in the Spirit right now, or am I walking in the flesh? Because part of the fruit of the Spirit is, you know, peace.
Yeah.
And then I have to understand it goes beyond comprehension, so that means that I won't necessarily come to peace by thinking this through, and now it seems safe. So I just wanted to bring that up because, like you said, Sam, so many people operate off this idea that if you have a lack of peace, if you have anxiety, then God doesn't want you to do it. But peace is real in this world. It's as you started, Jeff, with the idea of a steady heart but a shaking hand. That,
yeah.
to me, is the peace that surpasses all understanding.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I think it's so deep, that peace. It does. It goes beyond comprehension. It's you and God. And, you know, I talk to a lot of guys, especially young guys, who are trying to make decisions, and they want to get as much counsel as they can because they absolutely want to be sure that what they're doing is the right thing. And one of the first things that I am able to say is that I want to tell you, no matter what you do, it's going to require risk, and you don't know if you're going to make it or not. It's just
right.
the way it is. So we could talk counsel, and we can talk all we want, but eventually it's going to come down to you just don't know, and you have to take that risk, you know?
Right.
And in some way, this pleases God very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we are now at about 1 hour and 10 minutes, and we told everybody that we might go a little bit longer because this is a good conversation, and then when we're done, we want to just open up any phone lines if people want to dialogue. But
hey.
let me encourage just for a moment. We're not done, but let me ask you guys, and I will do the same, give a personal, fairly recent experience of facing a risky situation or decision.
Okay, I tell you what, Sam, you've gotten a few stories in, and you've given some really good accounts. So let me take the first whack at this, and you can think here for a minute, okay, on that question. I'm loaded, ready to go. I'm going to burst if I don't get this one out. And, okay, Gary, great question. And just for a second, I want to kind of go back, and I recognize something about myself in this particular story. And I was good enough after 20 years at U.S. Airways that I could look at the weather going on around the country and really know on what particular day life was going to get very difficult for me. And so there's a storm brewing up in Texas. It starts sweeping up through, and it's going to the north, and it's literally killing people. I mean, it's just torrential rains and hail and thunderstorms and tornadoes. And well, I'm looking at my flight plan, and I'm going, you know, I'm going to see that baby on the second day in Kansas City. And sure enough, I'm flying into Kansas City, and we're looking at this weather, and I'm not comfortable with it. And so lo and behold, a beautiful thing happens. I get this Delta pilot that just sneaks in right before me, and I have him on TCAS, so I could see him on my radar, and he's the same altitude as me. So I see him, and I see 00. So he's at the same altitude, and we're in the same direction, and he's 3 miles ahead of me. And I literally take this storm by sneaking in behind him, and he's like a probe for me. And I'm like, okay, if he survives this weather, if I see 00, I'm going to be good. I'm just going to watch him, and I'm going to do this thing, you know. And I noticed that about myself. I'm in the air. I'm on the court. I'm on the rock climbing adventure. I'm on the Gali River, but I'm always willing to kind of let somebody else lead the way. I'll just kind of sit back and let them do it, and I'll get in their draft. Okay, so this is one of the things I noticed about myself. So just recently, this year, they had moved me in tennis from a B player to an A player. And so naturally, I say, listen, I'm not really an A player, so bury me way down in the doubles somewhere where I'm obscure and no one will actually see me play, you know. And so I play down there and I get my fair share of wins, but they know I'm a singles player. And so the last game of the season, I see the captain of the team walking up to me and I know exactly what he's going to ask me. And he looks at me and he goes, hey, would you mind playing number one singles? Number two singles. And on the A team. And so I know, oh, man, there's no way I'm going to win, but there's something in me that goes, you bet, yes, sir, I am here to play whatever you need. I'll fill that position. So I get out there really not expecting to win. I lose the first set 6-4, but while I'm doing it, I'm realizing I think I could actually beat this guy. So we have this conversation in between sets, and this guy's life is literally falling apart. And he starts talking to me, and I'm going, my gosh, this is what I do. He's in a major transition. I'm thinking about calling. I don't even want to tell this guy I'm a Christian right now, because what I really want to do is I just want to beat him, right? You know. But this conversation extends out. And so by the time we go into our second set, the time is really running on. And so I actually win the next set 6-2, and it comes down to a 10-point tiebreaker. But because we talked for so long in between sets, everybody else is done with their match, and everyone starts lining up and watching our match, because whoever wins this match is going to win the match. And I'll tell you what happened to me. I went right back to when I was in college, and the same thing happened to me. I played number six singles. I won that, but then I played number three doubles, and it all came down to the number three doubles match. And when everybody lined up and started watching me, I fell apart. I literally couldn't do it. I just tried to push the ball over the net, and we lost, and it was miserable. And when we went into our tiebreaker, I went right back to that place of fear of all the guys starting to watch, you know, the match is on you, and there I am pushing the ball back and forth. As this match turns out, I win in the tiebreaker 10-8 on a drop shot. I mean, it was ugly. But everybody is pounding me on the back and saying, what a great job, what a great job. And in the back of my mind, it's like, that is not me. That wasn't tennis. So I sat down with Pablo, and Pablo says to me, Jeff, you have never grown up on the tennis court beyond that point back in college. Your fear is pointing you to where you're wounded. And so Pablo goes, you're playing not to lose. And he says, oh, by the way, and this is where it gets really bad. He goes, oh, by the way, the tennis court is a mirror of life. You're playing not to lose. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, and now I'm kind of lost. I don't know if I like Pablo anymore, you know. this is way beyond a tennis coaching session now, right? And I'm realizing things about my life. And so you would think that, okay, the opposite of playing not to lose is you now play to win. And Pablo was like, nope, you can't play to win either. You just play. You just play everything you have all the time. And so then he's got me now going back out on the court, and I'm not worried about winning or losing. I'm just learning how to play full out. And I love that quote in Bagger Vance, you know, this is a game. And this is true of life, okay? And I would say this to every young man out there that's younger than me. I'll say anybody younger than me. You are going to try to find a way to win in life. But in life, like in tennis, there's always somebody better than you. And you can't win this game. The only thing that you can do is you can play with your full heart. Just play everything you got without worrying about the score. Because in the end, it's not going to come down to what the score was. It's just going to come down to, did you play? Did you play with your full heart? And so that's a real current thing for me, where my fear brought me back to a wound that really God wants to heal. It was very salient to me, you know. And this carries into the rest of my life, this idea of not playing to lose.
That's great. What an amazing lesson. What an amazing thing to have someone say to you that they can see because they're observing your life versus you can see because you're in the middle of it.
Right, right. So it's really hard now to go out there, because every time you get close to winning a match now, you want to kind of go back to try to control it and play a control game and not play with your whole heart, you know. And sort of forgetting about that and just starting to swing away and stroke it is all the difference in the world, you know. And I really think bottom line is that's what God is after in us, you know. And you know what? We're going to have a lot of balls go wide. We're going to have a lot of balls go long. But eventually, if you keep playing that, they're going to start hitting, you know, somewhere down the road. So not being afraid to lose has been a major, major part for me. So as we talk about this, I'm still in it right now. I don't think we ever really fully get over all this. I'm right in the middle of it.
That's really good.
That's good, Jeff.
Thanks. Well,
Sam?
There you go, Sam. I took the bite on that, so now you've had plenty of time to think about your story.
Well, I have a short story. I have a friend, and this is about a friend of mine and my discussion. I have a friend, and both of you guys know him, Pete Emhoff. And for years he worked for Young Life as an area director in the Michigan area. And a while ago he began to think he wanted to do men's ministry, and he just was losing his heart to do high school stuff. He loved the high school kids, but he just didn't want to do it. And he and I were having lunch once. And he was saying, Sam, I just want to do men's ministry. I just want to do men's ministry. And, you know, out of my mouth slipped my dad's slogan, which is, what's the worst that can happen? So I said to Pete, what's the worst that can happen? And Pete sort of looked stunned. He says, well, I might run out of money if I go into men's ministry. And then he thought a minute and said, yeah, but you know what? Young Life would hire me back. Then he said, my wife might be disappointed. And he said, nah, she'd support me. Then he said, you know, he sort of went through this little litany of things. And then he finally said, I could fail. And he got teary-eyed, and he started to cry. And you know what? For us, Pete and I both sat and had a long discussion saying, what is our greatest fear? You know, asking ourselves, what's the worst can happen? Sometimes we'll unveil the greatest fear. And Pete ended up in that discussion saying, I need to confront this. I need to deal with this great fear of I need to succeed, or you know, I have to avoid failure. Sort of along your lines, Jeff. I have to avoid losing.
Right.
But he had to say, I had to avoid failure. And he was very wise. He got a few guys together, and he said, I want to do this. Is it best for me to deal with this fear by staying at Young Life and praying and caring, or is it best for me to step out? And a bunch of guys just worked with him and talked with him, and he ended up stepping into it, and he's thrilled. I mean, he looks back, and he says, if I had stayed where I'd stay, I would be my soul was being sucked out of my body. And now he's really happy. Now, it's risky every day. His paycheck isn't quite as consistent, but he wouldn't.
Right.
If you asked him now, he wouldn't change it. He wouldn't change it for all the gold in you know, Fort Knox, because because he took a risk, but he did it with wisdom, and he did it by uncovering and facing what he felt at the time was his heart's deepest fear.
That's good.
That's really good.
So, yeah, that's good. Black,
let me talk about that.
Yeah, go ahead, Gary. You got to answer your own question now.
Okay. So let me share two quick stories. Two quick stories, and then we'll give kind of our concluding thoughts, and then we'll open the lines. Two stories come to mind. One is years ago, and I'm thinking this is now probably 6 years ago. 7 years ago, my kids drove with me, my two boys and my youngest daughter drove with me up to Glacier, where my daughter was in a school with Youth of the Mission up there. They have a base there. right outside the Glacier National Park. And we drove up there to see her graduation from the program. And then after that, we were going to camp in Glacier and do some canoeing. So one day, the boys and I grabbed a canoe. My oldest daughter, who is with me now because she just graduated from this program, my youngest daughter drove us to this place to put the canoe in the water. And we had talked to the rangers, and they said, you know what, you'll be fine. We haven't heard any reports of anything up there. So we get in the water. We portage through all these trees and get to this place, and we're going down the river, and it's just absolutely beautiful. No one's there, which made me a little suspicious why no one else was canoeing this river. So anyway, we get to this point where we are going down. We had to make a choice between going to the right or left at this Y in the river, and we took the one side, and before we knew it, we were coming up to the screen, this three or four or five logs that had hit up against the bank, and we were going to hit this thing because the river turned sharp left from where these trees were and knew we were going to hit this. And sure enough, we hit it. It dragged the canoe under instantly. The canoe was just gone. And my one son almost went underneath this thing, and I don't think he would have survived it, but I grabbed his arm. We pulled ourselves out. We walked across this forested area. I mean, we were cutting up our legs and everything else, but we just wanted to get to the road. When we got to the other side of this forested area, we realized we just hit the other Y of this river. And this was cold. I mean, this is up in Glacier. It is cold water. It's running fast and hard. And we had a river to cross to get to the road. And I really thought, let's just swim the river. Let's just swim across. But I realized that if we missed the bank, there was one place where if we swam across, we could get out. The rest of the places we couldn't because there was a bank there. And there was no way of getting out, and you would just go further down in the river. And I was willing to do it, but I wasn't so sure that my young boys could do it. And at that point, I was really confronted. I just wanted to get out of the situation, so I just wanted to swim the river. But I had to stop for a second and ask myself, okay, what's the risk? Well, the risk, I didn't feel like I would die, but I felt like my boys could. And I thought, I'm not willing to do that. And so what's the consequence of not taking the risk? Well, it's spending the night on this side of the bank until someone rescues us, because eventually someone's going to know we're gone. And I thought, you know, we can survive sleeping overnight here. We can do this. We have nothing with us, but we can do this. And that was a point, speaking of risks, where I had to assess, you know, what are the consequences and what are my motivations right now? And what have I learned? And I had always learned, I had learned from reading, whenever you get lost, the best thing to do is stay where you are because people can then find you. But if you keep wandering off, there's a chance they won't find you. So there's a situation of a risk that I realized I shouldn't take, and it's good that I didn't. Okay, so let me give you another risk. So the risk that all of you are aware of, when 3 years ago I realized that I could stay with Ransom Heart or I could leave. I could stay with this great ministry, having this great impact, working with these good men and women, or I could leave and pursue my heart and do what I really sense God was telling me to do. He'd been telling me through scripture, through prophetic words, through conversations with friends, and through my desires that this is what I should do, but I knew it was risky. I mean, the recession had just hit, and I knew I was going to have to build something from scratch after building this over 7 years, and there were no guarantees. So trying to assess the risk of this, I realized, and I knew I could stay. I mean, staying wasn't a good option, but I knew it was an option, at least for a while. But I realized that if I stayed, I was going to lose my heart. I was going to lose this thing that was coming to greater life in me. And maybe I would get to the point where there was no return back to it again. Like Lewis talked about, it became hardened, almost unredeemable at that point. And again, through counsel, through God speaking to me, again, through prophetic words, prophetic people, through scripture, you know, I knew I had to take the chance. And talking to those who would feel the consequences, being my wife particularly, you know, she said, we have to go. We have to do this. This is something we need to do. And so I had both the desire to leave, but the fear of what could happen by leaving. But I can say there was this peace that surpassed my understanding, because I couldn't quite rationalize why I should be at peace, but I knew that this is something I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a personal example of a risk that I took. And I'll give you one more, and that is this. You know, after I left, part of the consequence of that situation was I walked away thinking, you know, it is just too hard, it is too painful, it is too messy to work with other people closely, intimately. And I don't mean from a distance, but closely. And I had realized that where my heart had gone with this was, I'm just not going to work with anybody anymore. It's just simple. It's simpler to cut things off. It's simpler to create things. It's just
smart
simpler.
Move.
Yeah. Until no. God kind of confronted me and said, Gary, is this what you want? And I remember when God kind of asked me that question, I mean, I welled up with tears. I was by myself, but I mean, instantly, I was moved to tears going, I don't want to live like this anymore. And I felt like God said, well, are you willing to take the risk for what you want? And that was a hard decision for me. It took a while for me to say, I'm willing to take the risk because I don't want to live alone anymore. And it felt risky. But I also knew the consequence was probably of living alone would be the eventual destruction of my heart. But still risky. So those are some of my personal examples.
You know, they're incredible stories, Gary, both of them. I mean, and I can't wait till we can have a conversation over a cigar here soon and talk about some of those in depth. But what was interesting and fascinating to me is that the first one was your life. The first risk was about your life, your physical life. And then the second risk that you talked about was your heart. And then, of course, the third one is about relations. And I think with men, I think that we choose to save our physical self and choose rather to lose our heart, because it's not as obvious and it takes a lot longer to really to be known, you know? And I think that's the unfortunate end of risk for guys is they choose to preserve their body and lose their heart. And we know that, you know, above all things, guard your heart, right? That's the most important thing ever. And in order to guard it, you had to take a step to lose everything that you knew over those years with Ransom Heart. And that was a significant event in the kingdom and the work that was done there. It changed my life. It changed so many guys' lives, rescued them. And so to leave everything, to follow your heart, is a risky thing, but an incredibly courageous thing that then is going to save other men's lives. You know, I don't think God asks us to take a risk in the kingdom for anybody, for our benefit. It's always to save other lives. He's always saving lives. So if you take a risk, you're saving lives. He's going to develop that and use that to save other men, you know. He's healing the brokenhearted and releasing the captives and the prisoners. And so as you follow him and you guard your heart and you move in that, then that's the result. And, you know, I think that that's what Jesus was doing on the cross. You know, man, we saw that movie, The Passion, and we saw him praying in the garden, you know, in the blood. And, you know, he was fearful there. You know, I don't really know any way to kind of describe it. You know, is there any way I can get out of this, you know? But in order to go through with that, that's that crucial adventure where, you know, where risk becomes completely losing everything that you know and falling on the sovereignty of God, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the most difficult one, I think, you know.
Yeah. That's a great point. That's really, really good. So let me ask you, and maybe Jeff, you've just started into this, but let me ask you guys to kind of come back with your final thoughts on this whole conversation about risk and living with it, embracing it, walking through it.
Sam, do you want to go first? Because I went first last time.
Sure. I think my final comment is something I shared a little bit earlier. I just want to say again, and that's the Jeremiah 17:7 passage, which is, "Blessed is the man whose trust is the Lord, who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord." I think as I look at risks in my life, I very often can accurately or inaccurately measure what the possible consequences could be, and I'll say, boy, I really don't want those consequences. I think when I say that, when I actually just put my trust in God and I say, God, you know, I'm going to take this, and if that's the consequence you want, even though it looks to me like a terrible, dire consequence, I'm willing to take it because I know that you're up to something that's greater than I can imagine right now. And so I think that we want to be able to embrace risk partly as a way of expressing our deep trust in God, not in our own plan, not even our own ideas, because God is always up to something deeper and greater than our ideas and plans.
Mm. That's Amen. Good. Yeah.
That's good.
That's good. Well, you know, as far as the final thought, I would just like to read in the one-year Bible from May 16th. It's a short passage here, and it says, he's talking about David's mighty men. You know, and these were the guys who at one point were in the cave with him. They were in debt, depressed, and generally discontented. But having run together, and again, this is the best way to take a risk, is to do it with a group of men, because sometimes they're leading and then sometimes you're leading, you know, like Gary described. It's just so necessary to form up. But he says, next in rank was Shema of Agi from Hara. One time the Philistines gathered at Lehi and attacked the Israelites in the field full of lentils, and the Israelite army fled. But Shema held his ground in the middle of the field and beat back the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. And, you know, if that's what was said about me as my story is being written, that I held my ground and the Lord brought a great victory, that would be fine with that. That's the highest honor that we could have. And in the sense, what Shema did there was he took a risk and God honored it. And so that's what I'm saying about risk. Risk brings heaven to earth. And so what I love about that is that when we talk about our kids, as God is talking about one of his right here, we have a tendency to talk about the stories that where they succeeded, where they did something extraordinary, and where they really truly acted like themselves. You know, that's what calling is. Calling is being yourself. And so, you know, I don't think God is going to be up there talking about the thousand times when we were stuck and frozen in fear. I think he's going to talk about that one time that we held our ground and a great victory had come. And so for what we're saying to you today as you're listening to this podcast is that if there's a risk out there to take, we're probably, again, with wise counsel and all the things we said, we're going to say go for it. Give God something to be talk about tonight, you know, as they gather around the campfire and have God go, hey, look at Bob Kane down there. Did you see what he did today? You know, that's my boy down there. And so those risks, I think, and those victories that get taken because we've taken that risk, that's the stuff that's going to be written in heaven, and that's the stuff that people are going to remember us for eternity for.
Mm. Boy, that's really good. That's really good. And though there needs to be nothing added to what both of you have said, let me just throw in a couple ideas that I had written down. And that is, as you're saying, life is filled with risks, right? It's filled with decisions, with actions that have to be taken. It's not unique to any one of us. It's everyone's experience in this life. It's inevitable. And so we have to embrace the risks and go for it and not deny that they're there or try to avoid them. That's just impossible for any of us, let alone the verse that was brought up before, that it's you know, it's impossible to please God without faith. He wants us to live by faith. So David Grayson said, we fail more often by timidity than by over-daring.
Yeah.
I think it's so true. I mean, when I look at my life where I would rate something as failure, it's usually something that I didn't do that I wished I had. Far more than things that I went for, you know, that didn't turn out well. And I just think it's true. I think usually we are safer daring more than daring less.
I think it's
2 Peter 2:29 that says, by what a man is overcome, by this he is enslaved. And I think often the reward of taking a risk is once again refusing to be overcome by fear, because I don't want to be enslaved by fear, fear of rejection, fear of shame, fear of failure, fear of not being loved, whatever that is. I don't want to be overcome by fear and therefore being enslaved by it. So I think many times the risks that we face, and they may be small, maybe a conversation, it may be a career move, part of the benefit is just one more time saying to fear, no, I will not be enslaved by you. You will not overcome me.
Amen.
And then recapping what we said is, I think with risks, some of the ways that we deal with it is, first, we deal with the realities. What are the real realities, honestly, of this? What do we think is the downside to taking this action and writing those out? Because we might find that the majority of those are unfounded. They're unreal. And the few that are real that we discover, we need to deal with. Either there's a way around that, or it's a consequence that at this point in our life, it's not wise for us to take. But deal with the real realities versus this vague sense of foreboding. So deal with the realities. Number two, try to get to the level of motivation, right? Why do I want to do this? Is my motivation good or bad? Or why do I not want to do this? What's my motivation in that? The third thing I take away is this idea of timing. You know, there's risks, but there's also the issue of, do I take the risk now or later? So not everything is now. So always asking the question of timing, which brings me to my fourth point, and that is counsel. First, the counsel of God. You know, which is who we ask, God, do I do this now or later? When are you asking me? Is the timing right? Because there's different seasons. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to tear down, a time to build, and so on. So what's the timing of this? And do you want me to do it? And then there's the wise counsel of others who are not in the pressure of fear, of timing, of consequence, who can come in and really help us see what we can't see. And then the very last thing was, I think, which I hadn't thought about before this conversation, being open to that perhaps what is greatest, if we take this risk, is far more than we imagine. It may not be the goal that we thought, but it may be something greater than that, something we learn, the practice and experience of taking a risk for the next bigger one that's coming.
Right.
And so on. That really, in reality, I believe, at least I believe it with my head, and I'm trying to believe it more with my heart, is there really is no failure as someone who walks with God.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Now, you know, on that point, Gary, in that movie, that documentary, 180 Degrees South, the guy says the greatest adventures answer questions that you didn't even know to ask before you started the adventure.
That's great. That is so good. Okay. Go ahead.
Now, I don't want to be the guy that has the last word, but I love one of the last words of Jesus. He said, it is finished. There wasn't anything that he was supposed to do that he hadn't done yet. You know, and in a sense, you know, we really forget about that. You know, God wanting to bring heaven to earth and walk in humanity here. He said, it is finished. And maybe that's the greatest thing we could say at the end of our lives is, you know what, it's finished. I did it, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And you know what? There's. I don't think there's anything else more to say with that. That's so good. So, you guys, thank you. This was just fun doing this. I have learned a lot through this conversation, and even through the desire that we had to do some thinking, researching, praying, you know, coming up to this conversation. This was just, I know, great for my heart, and I hope great for others. So we will do more conversations like this in the future, and we will make this public. I'll put this up so that others can hear it, as we have been encouraged by those on the chat line. So with that, let me say thank you, and we'll see you on the next podcast. And everyone else, hey, if you want to join us now, the recording is off. So if you want to join us, I'll just open up all the lines here.